Thanks for tuning in. Stick around. We will amaze and delight you, especially when we bring the snake handlers out tonight. Hey, you notice how quickly the story of the four guys who invaded Senator Mary Landrieu's office in New Orleans, how quickly that story has been classified as nothing but pranksterism and relegated to... Well, in this case, yesterday, in Sunday's Week in Review. Yeah. Under the headline, In Politics, Scamps, Saboteurs, and the Occasional Criminal. Kind of a lighthearted, tongue-in-cheek piece written by Mark Leibovich. And, you know, and I saw it, I thought, oh, okay, here's some more information about these guys who broke into Mary Landrieu's office. This should be interesting. But... what Mr. Leibovich does is refer to them in kind of the Dick Tuck mode. Anybody know who Dick Tuck is? Was and is. He's retired now. He's about 80. He's in his mid-80s. He was a renowned menace, as Leibovich puts it, to Richard Nixon. He was a prankster. Dick Tuck's crowning achievement occurred at a rally in the Chinatown section of Los Angeles way back in 1962 when Nixon was running for governor. And Nixon spoke in front of there were a bunch of children behind him holding up welcome signs in Chinese. At least Nixon thought they said welcome, but he was told... they actually said, what about the Hughes loan? That was referring to an explosive issue in that campaign, an old loan from Howard Hughes to Mr. Nixon's brother. So the signs actually say, you know, I mean, that was really risky stuff back in 1962. Huh? So Mark Leibovich, writing in the Sunday New York Times Week in Review, wants to equate these four felons... with pranksterism, a la Dick Tuck. As a matter of fact, Leibovich says the arrest of four conservative activists in New Orleans last week on suspicion of tampering with the phones in Senator Mary Landrieu's office recalls, Leibovich writes, an obscure Saturday Night Live skit from the 1970s. It was called Dangerous But Inept. And it featured a fake talk show in which the guest, played by Lorraine Newman, the guest was Lynette Squeaky Fromm, you know, the pistol-wielding klutz whose misadventure a few feet from President Gerald Ford sent her to prison for 34 years, right? Hey, funny, funny, funny. And Leibovich goes on to say, Dangerous But Inept, the Saturday Night Live skit, is a pretty good fit for the New Orleans caper. And its perpetrators are causing some connoisseurs of political mischief to bemoan a lost art. Are you getting this? Okay. A lawyer, Mr. Leibovich writes, a lawyer for one defendant said the men were trying to document that Ms. Landrieu's staff was ignoring constituent calls. The lawyer, J. Garrison Jordan, said, you're dealing with kids. I don't think they thought it through that far. Kids, just pranksters, Dick Tuck. And yet, last week, We told you of a story carried by rawstory.com. Two of the three men arrested, along with Acorn pimp James O'Keefe, in Senator Mary for tampering with the phones in Senator Landry's office in New Orleans, have ties to the United States intelligence community. Remember? The three accused by the FBI of aiding and abetting O'Keefe are Stan Dye, Robert Flanagan, and Joseph Basil. Dye's links to the intelligence community appear to be particularly strong. He was a speaker at Georgetown University's Central Intelligence Agency Summer School Program, the speaker. In June of last year, he is also listed as an associate director, assistant director, at the Intelligence Community Center of Academic Excellence at Trinity in D.C. That's part of Georgetown University. The Trinity program received a $250,000 renewable grant from the U.S. intelligence community upon being launched in 2004, according to its website. The CIA summer school packet for Georgetown University's summer school program also notes that Dye, quote, served as the operations officer at the Department of Defense Irregular Warfare Fellowship Program, end quote. Dye has been an undergraduate fellow with the Washington-based national security think tank Foundation for the Defense of Democracies. That's partially funded by the U.S. State Department. Its leadership council and board of advisors includes Newt Gingrich, Joe Lieberman, William Kristol, Eric Cantor, Richard Perle, and Charles Krauthammer. Dye traveled to Israel for 2 weeks in 2004 on an FDD-sponsored trip. All expenses paid by FDD, and it goes on and on. A host of FDD testimonials from academic fellows revealed that many fellows have traveled to Israel for training and field trips. Dye's co-conspirator, Robert Flanagan, is currently seeking a Master of Science degree from the Missouri State University's Defense and Strategic Studies program. All four of the men arrested in the plot have well-documented conservative ties, according to the Associated Press. They're kids? This was a prank? Well, according to Mark Leibovich in the New York Times Week in Review, Mr. Leibovich feels very secure in quoting a lawyer for these four. You're dealing with kids, said the lawyer. I don't think they thought it through that far. Really? But what about the ties to the CIA and the DIA and Israeli intelligence and God only knows what parts of U.S. intelligence? What about that, Mark Leibovich and Mr. Attorney for these four plumbers? And what about the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies that these gangsters seem to have ties to? An organization whose board of directors includes people who were involved in the Project for a New American Century that advocated targeted assassination, invading countries, violating the Constitution, overthrowing governments, and generally just killing people. They're just kids, said the lawyer. They're kids. I don't think they even, you know, thought it through that far. Well, that's the meme, I guess. They're just kids. You know, why is everybody getting their panties in a wad? You're just a little political pranksterism, you know, like the acorn pimp thing. And yet there's Flanagan and Dye, especially Dye, D-A-I, deep, involved connections to the U.S. and Israeli intelligence community. But they're just kids, you know, pranksters. So that's the end of that story, right? What do you suppose is going on behind the scenes to get, they're out on $10,000 bond, all four of them. What do you suppose is going on behind the scenes to get these four completely sprung and off the hook? And Maybe a fine, maybe an apology, maybe, okay, darn it, we're sorry. We're just checking on your phone.
Seekers, gather round the campfire. It's more Mike Malloy.
Don't you dare to try and stop us.
21 past the hour. Yeah, it never fails to amaze me how quickly the establishment in this country, the established media, get behind a story like the break-in to Mary Landrieu's office. Now, remember, the Watergate burglary was referred to for the longest period of time as a third-rate burglary. Of course, it was referred to as a third-rate burglary by Republicans who did not want the massive scope of what the Watergate break-in represented ever to come out. And it wasn't until who was the guy that pled guilty? I'm trying to think of his name. He was part of the U.S. intelligence community, and he took the fall. I forget his name. You don't have to send it to me. It's okay. And Judge John Sirica, who was overseeing the original hearings, refused to accept the guilty plea, if I'm remembering this right, because Sirica understood that something was afoot. And then, of course, the sordid story eventually came out. And the megalomaniac who was in the White House resigned. The damage that Nixon did, of course, is ongoing all these years later. I mean, 35 years, 37 years later, 38 years later, it's still occurring. So watch and wait, or wait and watch, as we see what develops regarding the story of the four youngsters, the four kids who were involved in the break-in at Mary Landrieu's office. Maybe somebody will refer to it, Lord, I hope not, as a youthful indiscretion, a la Henry Hyde, who had a long-term mistress starting when he was in his 40s. And, you know, great Catholic. Yes, he was. Very religious man, part of the Knights of Columbus and probably Opus Dei and on and on and on. Yes, a very moral man, but he had a girlfriend on the side, a married woman, whose family became so distraught, the husband did, that it caused a divorce, which is, of course, against the teachings of the Catholic Church. But Henry Hyde, when he was getting it on with his lady, didn't think about any of that, right? Oh, never mind. Youthful indiscretion. So we'll see how this one plays out, how the break-in. Given the difference now in corporate media between now and almost 40 years ago, I think the effort by Mark Leibovich on Sunday in the Week in Review section of New York Times, I think that was designed to be the bullet between the eyes of this story, the knife between the third and fourth ribs. Is that where it would go, Kathy? Right in there? And the twist. And the story is now officially declared a prank. Too much at stake if the truth were to come out on this one and how many other stories. You see, this is why, isn't it, Truth Seeker, that so many of us walk around with that kind of blank look on our face about Yeah, but how did they defeat the most sophisticated intelligence and system and weaponry and all that with box cutters? How in the world did 19 guys manage to hijack 4 jetliners and wow, man. That's why a lot of us walk around with that kind of blank stare. And fewer of us are still willing to bring up the topic because it goes right into the memory hole. All of it. The entire thing. So I would imagine that the story of the 4 who broke into Mary Landrieu's office will wind up the same way. I was reading catching up on Jerusalem Post online, and this is from a week ago. The White House officials said, you remember when the message, quote, audio message that was reported on Al Jazeera from Osama bin Laden was broadcast? He claimed responsibility for the plot to bomb a Detroit-bound airliner on Christmas Day. Remember that? Turns out, I don't remember. Maybe this was in American media. I don't know. I don't remember seeing it. But the U.S. officially said that we can't authenticate the bin Laden tape. White House spokesman Robert Gibbs said, quote, nobody's had a chance to authenticate that tape, end quote, and he declined comment on whether the U.S. believes bin Laden played any role in the Christmas incident, which means that they would have doubt or refuse comment, let's put it that way, as to whether or not they even think it's bin Laden. Now, I know this appeared somewhere in American media. I'm sure it did, that there was doubt as to the authenticity of bin Laden's Al Jazeera tape, huh? I guess I just missed it.
Renegade Talk Radio done right. From the left, it's Mike Malloy.
Yeah, it is. 25 before the hour. Phone number here is 877-996-2556 if you want to play. Another item that caught my eye. This is today. If you stay on top of your world history, I don't mean the political history, I mean the earth history, you know that the earth is, what, 5-6 billion years old, and there have been 5 major mass extinctions of life on earth. The worst, according to the scientists, was the one that claimed up to 96% of marine life and 70% of terrestrial life. And then there was the Cretaceous Tertiary event when a meteor impact probably claimed the dinosaurs. And a lot of scientists agree, life scientists, that there is mass extinction occurring now. Right now, there's one going on right now. It's not as dramatic as a meteor impact in the Yucatan or off the coast of Africa that destroys everything. But it's slower because there are human beings here to witness it. It's slower than extinctions caused by events like a meteor. Cornell University researchers have announced that a fatal fish virus has spread into Lake Superior and is now in all the Great Lakes. And authorities, I don't know who that would be, but authorities are taking measures to raise public awareness and prevent a widespread outbreak. But the virus is another indication of the dangers from what is referred to as the Holocene extinction. That's where we are now. It's called the H-O-L-O-C-E-N-E, the Holocene extinction. And it is occurring, according to biologists, so-called life scientists, like bees. Since 2006, beekeepers have been reporting widespread instances of colony collapse disorder. They have a name for it now, CCD, colony collapse disorder, in which the worker bees just disappear. Nobody is certain what's causing this. The EPA here is investigating maybe a pathogen or a parasite that could be causing the collapse. Some believe that agricultural pesticides are the most compelling explanation. But the implications of bee extinction, oh my God. You know, Kathy and I became aware of this when we were in Chicago about 10 years ago. She set out tomato plants, as Kathy is wont to do every spring. We set out tomato plants, or she did, and the little blossom, little yellow blossoms came out, and then nothing happened. That was it. And we were talking about one day, well, what happened? And I forget which one of us said, well, where are the bees? There are no bees. And this was, oh my God, this was in 99. This is, you know, a good 10, 11 years ago. Where are the bees? Well, we moved back to Atlanta and started in the Atlanta area and started a garden. We had to go to Lowe's or someplace and buy the whatever that stuff is. You pollinate the plants yourself. You take a Q-tip and put it in the solution and then dab inside the flower, the tomato plant flower. That worked for a while. But the bee collapse, so many plants and agricultural crops around the world are completely reliant on bees for pollination. And plants, according to the scientists, would have to revert thousands or even millions of years of evolution to reproduce without bees. I mean, how else are you going to get the pollen from plant to plant, from blossom to blossom, from stamen to pistil, or whatever the hell it is? I was asleep during biology class when we studied all this 1,000 years ago. Rats. Bats. There's something called white nose syndrome in which cave-dwelling bats are found dead with a ring of white fungal growth around their noses. First discovered in 2006. Since then, it Schoharie County, New York, since then has spread to caves across the Northeast. This fungus is, according to the scientists, likely just a symptom of something else that's killing bats while they sleep. Now, bats, as you know, are crucial to controlling insect populations. And without bats to eat the insects, then you've got the possibility of insect-borne diseases spreading more easily. Uh-oh. Amphibians? According to an article published a year and a half ago in Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences, one-third to one-half of all amphibian species on Earth are on the edge of extinction, threatened by what the article called a perfect storm of disease, habitat loss, pesticides, and climate change. This April 10th, will mark the second annual event of Save the Frogs Day. Now, I'm sure there'll be lots of jokes made about that, right? Save the Frogs! Damn, what's that? Another one of them liberal, oh my God, who thought of that one? Obama? Save the Frogs. Right? Predatory fish. Top-level predators on land and in the water are some of the species most affected by so-called habitat loss. But the species in the ocean looks especially dire, according to reports. Overfishing, pollution, and a shifting food supply are threatening marlin, tuna, swordfish. Researchers believe that up to 90% of large predatory fish have disappeared from the ocean since the 50s. Humans? Between the infectious disease scare of the week, the persistent threat of nuclear weapons, and alarming food supply questions, it can be easy to believe we're on our way to being little more than an unusual blip in the history of planetary life. Ooh, what a way to start the week, huh? Bees and bats, amphibians, oh my, predatory fish and humans, uh-oh. Uh-oh. Hey, don't pay any attention to it. It doesn't mean a thing. Have you been following what's going on in England? The Chilcot Inquiry? Chilcot being a man, he's, what is he, specially appointed by whom? The guy was appointed by British Prime Minister Gordon Brown. But it's an investigation into England's role in the Iraq War. And this inquiry currently is, I think it's still going on, by a committee of privy councillors, they're called. The open sessions of the inquiry began on back in November. And there is a report expected before the general election in 2010, or after the general election. It'd be sometime in June. But Tony Blair was forced to testify. I don't know if it was through subpoena power. I don't know how this works in the British system. But he testified before the Chilcot inquiry. And the families of British military personnel killed in Iraq who were there accused him of being disrespectful. Blair is denying everything. He says that he believed all the intelligence. He believed that the U.S. intelligence community and George W. Bush were absolutely correct about 45 minutes to launch with Saddam's missiles or what have you. But it's an ongoing investigation, not really an investigation. It's more like an inquiry where, we were talking last week how Obama went into the den of thieves that is a Republican retreat that they had in Baltimore last week and took on the cowards, face to face, something that, of course, a George Bush or, any Republican would never do. And how that was similar to the British system. I'm not sure how an inquiry like the Chilcot inquiry is convened. On what basis? Is this, I don't know if it's a normal review process where after an event such as the UK getting involved in yet another war, maybe this inquiry is a standard operating procedure. I don't know. But can you imagine this going on in our country? Can you imagine George W. Bush and Dick Cheney sitting down? I'm not talking about the 9/11 crap. I'm talking about these two murderers, these two war criminals. And, of course, Tony Blair qualifies for that category. But Cheney and Bush sitting down being questioned by representatives of the people as to why they did A, B, C, and D where it concerned Iraq and Afghanistan, especially Iraq. Can you imagine such a thing in this country?
Even Bob Geldof looks alarmingly thin. I got to get on that shuttle, get me out of this place. But there's going to be warfare up there in outer space. It's been a hard day.
Has he mentioned yet tonight how much he hates these people? It's More Mike Malloy.
Before the hour. Want to do some phone calls? All right. Sheldon is in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. Hey, Sheldon.
Hey, Mike. How you doing?
I'm all right. How are you?
All right. It's been a long time. I don't know if you remember me, but back in 2004, you came out to our school and made a presentation at an Alpharetta.
Oh, yeah. High school.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. That was a million years ago. That was when Air America was still alive, I think.
I think it was, yeah. And anyway, I just keep trying to ignore what's going on in Georgia, but it's just almost impossible.
Well, listen, man, you live in South Carolina. Are you kidding me?
Well, no, you know, say what you want about South Carolina. We've got a good Democrat named Jim Rex who's running the Department of Education.
Yeah.
They are making a serious effort to improve. They got a long way to go.
Not quite as far. Well, I don't know. Either South Carolina, Mississippi, or Georgia is always last in everything. I don't know anymore where the rankings are. But what is it had you upset about Georgia?
Well, I saw on the AJC today.
That's the Atlanta Journal-Constitution for people who don't know.
That Freddie Perdue is claiming now that he raised spending for education in Georgia.
Now, who is the governor?
Yeah,
Sonny. Now, what's he saying? I'm sorry, I didn't hear that. What's he saying?
He's saying that he actually raised education spending in Georgia.
Well, that's not true.
Well, it doesn't have to be true.
That's
1984. Raising the chocolate ration.
Yeah, you got that right. As a matter of fact, in the metro Atlanta area, there are all kinds of desperate county school board meetings going on, probably even as we speak, about how in the hell they're going to be able to handle funding of programs because of what Purdue is doing.
They're all Republicans too, though. That's the problem.
Well, no, not all of them. As a matter of fact, in Metro Atlanta, DeKalb County, Fulton County, and the Atlanta City School Board. No, those three counties.
Go and look at Fulton County. It's all Republicans.
Oh, yeah?
Absolutely Kool-Aid drinkers. Blows them to the bone.
Well, how did that happen?
I know.
It was North Fulton, the north side. North Fulton probably put all the school board members on.
Yeah, they sure did.
Well,
they're just delighted with all of this. They're going to get to cut this and cut that and cut, and give tax cuts.
It's insane.
It's awful.
Look what's going on in California with their formerly premier university system. Everything is going down the commode where it concerns education. You know, that's one thing about the United States. We sure do think about the future as long as it's not beyond next week, right?
I can't say I'm impressed with Obama, though. I mean, it's like more Bush, you know?
Well,
Testing.
I'm not impressed with what he's doing for the most part either, but I'll tell you what, he is, what I read today, he's going to make some drastic changes in Don't Ask, Don't Tell. I'm sorry, not that. That's something. In No Child Left Behind. I got to remember all these stupid catchphrases. He's going to make some drastic changes in No Child Left Behind, especially where it concerns this ridiculous testing. I don't know what the original goal was with the testing, but when it is one of the primary directives of something like a school plan, whether you call it No Child Left Behind or whatever you call it, then the teachers are forced to teach to the idea of testing rather than teaching an education. And it's a damn shame. It is going on. Sheldon, I got to leave there. Thanks, pal. Don't be such a stranger. Don't let 6 years go by before you call in again, right? Take care. Stephen is in Natick, Massachusetts. Is that right, Natick?
Hi, Mike. Steve the banker.
Oh, Steve the banker. Hey, Steve.
How you doing?
I'm fine.
Oh, that's good. I'm still existing, still alive, and still working.
Oh, good. Well,
the budget, just to go over it, I'm going to just go over one little thing. And I'm going over, and I'm on the OMB site.
Mm-hmm.
Then when you go to it, it says, you know, the Defense Department is about $548 billion. But that does not include defense spending in other departments. I went to the Department of Energy, which I'm looking at right now, and mm-hmm. of their total budget, an incredible large part of their budget is defense budget spending. is actually spending for defense.
Right.
And so when you actually look at other departments that are not listed for defense but are spent on defense, it actually adds up. I haven't gotten to the final dollar mm-hmm. amount yet, but my guess is it does add up, of course, to over $1 trillion. Under Department of Energy, we looks like we're spending about $30 billion, just round figures. About a third of that actually goes to defense. So it doesn't go for cars,
right?
You know, research.
Now, what's the trillion? That's the defense budget.
Yeah, my total. Now I haven't finished it yet. I yeah. sent it to you in an email after I review the whole thing. But oh yeah, off the books and on books.
Right, right.
It's definitely over a trillion.
Right. Definitely. So we're spending 3%. Now, what was the thing you said? 30 billion, which is 3% of that.
Just for Department of Energy.
Department of Energy, which is where we should be spending. I would
$200 billion at least.
Yeah, at least to develop. Oh, never mind. Oh my God, my God, Steve.
I didn't want it to, you know, depress you.
Well, that's all right. When you get all the numbers figured out, man, give us a call. We'll talk about it.
Absolutely.
All right, buddy. Thanks.
Take care.
All right, you too. We'll be back after the break. Stick around. I'm Mike Malloy.
Individual results.
We'll work no stamping.
It's 7 past the hour. A couple open lines here if you want to chat. 877-996-2556. A couple of emails about the extinction event that is going on right now. Mike from Connecticut writes, hey, Mike, I've devoted my entire life to the study of birds. In fact, I make my living as a bird artist, painting plates for field guides. About 40 years ago, the spring migration of songbirds, particularly warblers, would fill the forest in the spring. These birds would be coming back from their Central American winter grounds. Over the years, this migration has dwindled down to where it is practically gone. Species like wood thrushes and whippoorwills are rapidly disappearing. What kind of world will we live our kids who would never be able to hear a thrush? Do you think dittoheads ever step foot in the woods or care about the passing of our natural world? Mike, no, the answer, no. We have a bird here. I think it's called the Georgia thrush, and I hope it never goes away. It is a distinctive sound. I think it's only in Georgia, North Georgia, maybe in northeastern Alabama, too. But I believe it's called the Georgia thrush, and it has a song. It starts in the spring and goes all summer. And it has a warble or song, whatever you call it, that sounds like bells. And it's incredible. I never heard it until I moved here permanently back in 72. Moved to North Georgia in 72. And it seemed to disappear for a number of years, and then it came back about 5 years ago, or we moved into an area where the habitat was still there, because where we live is, like I said, it's the foothills of the North Georgia Mountains, and also we have woods behind the house, and you can hear these, usually it's only one or two. I think it's a Georgia thrush. They're beautiful. GR, Heavily Armed Hopi in Arizona, writes, "Yes, Mike, we have introduced into a closed system toxins which are killing everything slowly. Earth is a closed system, like a human body. Nothing escapes that isn't doing 17,500 miles an hour. It stays here forever. So all that strontium-90 from nuclear tests, all the rare ores and minerals dug out of the ground, all the petroleum ever burned, it's all still circling the planet forever. Forever. Ask your friendly armed Indian. We knew this a long time ago." G. Roberts, Heavily Armed Hopi in Arizona, waiting for human colony collapse. Oh, my God. Well, it is kind of funny when you think about it, right? In a very bleak way. And Bruce writes, tomatoes eat all the bees. He writes, there are large areas in China that have had so much pesticide used on the cotton there that there have been no bees for 20 years, and the fruit trees are pollinated by hand labor. This is starting to be a problem as the peasant labor is aging out with the one-child policy and the growing middle class in China. By the way, tomatoes are wind-pollinated, not by insects. Really, if you plant them where they don't get enough wind, you need to shake their cages every day. See, you learn something every day. I had no idea. I thought bees pollinated tomato blossoms. Ah. Jay is in Sacramento. Hey, Jay.
How you doing, Mike?
I'm all right. How are you?
I'm doing great. Hey, I'm the bee colonies collapsing.
Yeah.
The Europeans already figured this out 2 years ago. Down the cell phone towers. The frequencies mess with the drone's ability to find their way back to the hive. When the hive loses the number of drones, let's say the capacity is X, it gets down to 60% of that. Hive collapse is imminent because of molds and mites. They've already figured that one out a couple of years ago.
Well, I thought there was some disagreement. You say it's cell phone
towers.
As
the ratio of towers have gone up around the U.S., the number of hive collapses have gone up also.
Well, yeah, but as the amount of pesticide use in the environment has gone up, that also correlates with hive collapse, doesn't it?
Well, here's the thing about environmental damage that we do as mankind.
Yeah.
Even radio waves, radio frequencies being used, can affect insects and animals, and this happens to be one of the beneficial insects that we use.
Right.
So, I mean, it's our environmental damage and our environmental concerns can't be limited just to air and water and chemicals.
Yeah.
You know, radio frequencies are also something that does things to other beings.
Well, any way you look at it, it's a mess.
We got an issue.
We have an issue.
There's an issue.
We definitely have an issue. Thanks, Jay.
You're welcome.
All right. Appreciate you checking in. Yeah, I had forgotten the thing about cell phone towers or cell phones. That whole technology still blows me away anyway. 877-996-2556 if you want to call in. Another one of those little eye catchers. This comes from Bob, who writes, "It appears the Chinese aren't effing around. In America, you'll probably get cancer from smoking Chinese, from smoking." Oh, wait a minute. Let me start over. "It appears the Chinese aren't effing around. In America, you'll probably get cancer from smoking. Chinese bootleggers are guaranteeing it." And what Bob is writing about, A soon-to-be-released report from the U.S. Food and Drug Administration will expose information that Chinese counterfeit American cigarettes, specifically Marlboros, contain a, quote, very heavy, end quote, amount of both acrylamide and N-nitrosodium, N-D-E-L-A, is the abbreviation, N-D-E-L-A, both known to be carcinogens and an amount stated to be, quote, absolutely deadly, end quote, to smokers in even the smallest amounts. The FDA report follows 6 months of study by their laboratories following what was reported as a, quote, very sharp spike, end quote, in cases of lung cancer throughout the world. It has been disclosed that the Chinese counterfeit tobacco has been on the world market for about a year and that it is conservatively estimated that over 20 million packets of contaminated cigarettes have been shipped from Chinese sources to outlets throughout the world. A strict embargo on the contaminated tobacco product is due to be implemented, quote, within the week, end quote. This is dated January 27th, according to a spokesperson for the FDA. Marlboro cigarettes are sold in many countries, often used in lieu of currency. Chinese government agencies have so far had no comment. Now, that was the French news agency, AFP, put that story out. I wonder if that was a rival tobacco company who just made that all up, and we'll probably get sued now, right? No, I really don't care. Sue me. Counterfeit Marlboros. Now, how do you tell? How do you know which are real and which are counterfeit? Maybe do they still use the cowboy? No, he died. He died of lung cancer. The cowboy, the Marlboro man. I don't know. But the Chinese really don't care, do they? Huh? They really don't care. Of course, neither do we. I mean, neither do American exporters about a goodly percentage of our products. But I don't think we ship poison toothpaste around the globe, do we? Or do we? We ship depleted uranium around the world. We don't ship it. We fire it. You know, when you stop and think about it, if you removed the policies, not the people, but the policies of the United States and the policies of the Chinese, remove the foreign policies, whatever they are, trade, international relations, war, currency, remove the policies of these two behemoths, I get the feeling the earth would be a lot safer and a lot calmer. Do you get that feeling?
All your life, you were only waiting for this moment to arise. Blackbird singing in the dead of night. Take these sunken eyes and learn to see. All your life, you were only waiting for this moment to be free. Blackbird, fly. Blackbird, fly.
I got you.
Border to border and coast to coast, the Mike Malloy Show. All substance, no abuse.
Yeah, 21 past the hour. Kate on the road writes, fungus on grain. The Midwest has a stem mold on grain crops, killing the plants. Nothing stops the mold, spreading faster than research can follow it. Might have blown over from Africa. Some are proposing that it came from outer space. Debris coming down through the atmosphere, rocks, etc. Stardust is killing our food supply. Thoughts to ponder around the fire. No! Tim is in Detroit, listening on XM. Hey, Tim.
Hey, Mike.
Hi.
I hear feedback on the system, anyway. Regarding the bee collapse, it's still not clear. I mean, there have been a lot of studies, and the two culprits seem to be, according to journals like Nature or Science or some of the European journals, seems to be either some sort of a virus or pesticide.
Yeah, and, that's what I've read, yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, I know cell phones are blamed for everything these days, but we have to look at our environmental policies. I mean, they're terrible, not just for here, but for abroad. We're killing ourselves. You have President Obama talking about building nuclear plants. I nearly came off my chair. We have so much nuclear waste, now we don't know where to put it. Where in the hell are we going to put the nuclear waste if we build another 5 or 6 plants?
They'll probably figure out a way to ship it to the Palestinians, right?
Well, the thing is, dude, I mean, that stuff, it goes all over the groundwater and the atmosphere.
Of course. You know, this is what really irks me, that even considering the idea of nuclear reactors, if it didn't produce plutonium as a byproduct, which is the worst poison in the history of the human race, A, B, it's also a raw material for nuclear bombs. If there was no such thing as plutonium as an after product of a nuclear generation of power, hey, I'm all for it, but sorry.
Well, the thing is, too, Mike, the uranium, too, some of that's depleted, some of it's still radioactive. And you know the half-life of uranium is 4.6 billion years.
Well, it surely is. And when you think about how many countries in the Middle East and South Asia now that we have bombarded with the depleted uranium weapons casings, you know, shell casings and bullet casings and so on and so forth. It's horrible to think about. That's why I very seldom talk about anything other than stupid politics, because stupid politics are not as scary as some of this other stuff. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, nuclear power is actually more scary than Sarah Palin.
Well, that's and very few things are. Thanks, Tim. I appreciate you checking in, pal. I guess you all have heard all the jokes about the new Apple iPad. There's no point talking about that. But, according to the latest stuff that I've read, cell phones can put it that way, with enough exposure, can cause brain tumors, right? I mean, that's for real. Sandra's in Berkeley, California, listening on Sirius. Hey, Sandra.
Hi, Mike. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm okay.
Okay.
Not that great. Okay, so listen, I had to call you about the bee thing because I have been watching this for quite a few years because, you know, I'm very concerned about bees. And I really think, and I know it sounds a little nutty, but it doesn't sound that nutty because I have a very logical mind. All the plants have been changed by Monsanto, right?
Monsanto?
So,
yeah.
Yeah, so all the plants are different, okay? So when the bee fits into a flower or pollinates, it's like a key going into a lock. Well, if the plant has been modified, the key doesn't fit the lock anymore.
Now, that's certainly one way to look at it. That's pretty scary.
And I think that that's why they've been deserting, because they've been deserting the Monsanto fields. Mm-hmm. If you read about this, I've read a lot about it. So I think that the phones might be bad. I think that the pesticides, I think all of those things are true.
Right.
But I think that the problem they're having with the bees not recognizing the plants is because they've changed them.
That's a good point. I'm laughing. Because it's scary. I'll say it again.
Yeah, it's like if you came home at night and your key didn't fit the door anymore, you know?
That's true.
Can I say one other thing real quick?
Oh, sure.
And that is that I really feel that we need to change what Reagan said. It's a mindset, and we need to start saying that greed is bad, mm-hmm. greed is evil, greed is sick. People that are greedy are sick.
They really are.
And we need to keep saying it over and over and over again. And one other thing, if I could ask you, have you heard anything about these 137 arrest warrants from Interpol about financial terrorism?
I have not.
I don't know if it's true, but I've seen some things on the Internet that supposedly that there are arrest warrants, that bench warrants, so they wouldn't be, you know, arresting the people, but they'd have to come in and talk about money taken from the Federal Reserve by the Bushes and stuff.
Well, you're not home right now, are you?
No.
Okay, when you get home, send me a link. If you can find it on the web, send me a link, because I'd like to see that, okay?
Okay.
All right, Sandra, thanks.
Bye.
Take care. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy.
broken-hearted people living in the world agree there will be an answer, let it be. For though they may be parted, there is still a chance that they will see.
Soothing bedtime lullaby. It's Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. Steve, the banker who called in earlier about some of these items in the new budget that Obama submitted for consideration to the Congress today. Was it today? Steve writes, just one item here to make it easy for the average citizen to wrap their brain around. Of the $132 billion agricultural department budget, okay, $132 billion agricultural department, only $1.7 billion is budgeted for new farm loans. It looks like there's an existing portfolio of $2.4 billion in farm loans. The numbers are incredibly small and show why our agriculture policy is a mess. Now, this is easy, Steve writes. We need small farmers in local markets for safer food distribution. I would budget about $10 billion for new farm loans, and I would renegotiate every loan that is stressed out so farmers can keep their farms. I would invest in our farmers and our rural families. It's an easy equation. Neither Democratic nor Republican, neither liberal nor conservative. It's called an American policy of investment in rural communities and local farming across the nation. It's so simple. And yes, it's just a matter of priority. There is nothing in the agricultural bill that would keep me from adjusting my priority to loans to small farmers and renegotiating farm loans. It's insane, Steve. $132 billion agricultural department budget, but only $1.7 billion for new farm loans. Well, where in the hell does the other $130.3 billion go? Oh. That's right. The Defense Department. Some of those off-the-books operations, right? Marilyn is in Berkeley listening on Green 960. Hey, Marilyn.
Hey. God, I love what you're talking about. You send me. you do. I'm not kidding. The thing about the bees is I'd like to make a final comment, or maybe not final.
Sure.
A comment on that. We had a great shamaness here in the Northwest, Pacific Northwest. She's not with us anymore, but she was a great herbalist, and she lived in the forest, just a wonderful woman. And her comment about the bee and the beehive and the problems that people were having with their bees
mm-hmm.
was you cannot take the propolis, the beeswax, the royal jelly, the honey, rape the colony. It's a colony, remember.
Right.
And that's our relationship with it here in the United States, a colony. We just mm-hmm. go and take what we want. And what we want is all these goodies. Then you give the bee a so-called modern scientific diet of what the hell ever sugar water.
Mm-hmm.
And year after year you do this, decade after decade. And then a virus pops up in the bees. Well, geez, wonder why.
Right.
Could it be that these strains of bees have been weakened over the years? We've just simply robbed their colonies and used it for whatever we wanted. I don't know if you've ever priced royal jelly in the
no, I haven't.
In the health food store. Oh, my God, it's like $14 an ounce or something. Look, they're very, very lucrative. We have to rethink. She recommended that for several years we just leave the bees alone and allow them to get their strength back. But there's a couple of good things about this. I was in Hawaii on the Big Island, and they have very pure strains, very healthy and strong. And so when it's time to maybe, when we come to our senses about these hives with souls, this is not a colony, this is a hive with a soul, then possibly we can get our bees back. You know, they're visitors from Europe. These bees, these are the Apis mellifluus, I think it is something like that, are from Europe.
No, I didn't. I know none of this.
Yeah, we have native bees now. We have native bees.
Mm-hmm.
And they're great little pollinators. Some people, the Indians, all wish the American honeybee would go back home. But for, you know, apple trees and crops and all this stuff, they've been our friend. They've been a wonderful friend. But we have just basically raped and thrown in jail and no hospital care, no nothing.
Well,
just like our colonies.
You know, it's just getting to the point, and maybe it's always been at this point, although I don't think so. Maybe it's just an evolution of human consciousness, but we're to the point now where human beings are becoming, we've become, if you follow this Gaia theory, a virus or a bacterial infection on the planet, and the planet eventually is going to get rid of us in the same way that usually when I get one of my famous bronchial colds, I really don't do anything. I just wait it out. I may miss a couple days' work and drink lots of tea and sit around and bitch and moan about it. But eventually, you know, my body heals itself and the virus is gone. And, you know, the Gaia theory of Earth is basically the same thing. At some point, the planet, if it hasn't begun already, the planet will say, you know, I'm tired of being sick. I think I'll get well.
Yes, and it's so scary, like for grandmothers. You know, you look at your little grandchildren and you just wonder.
Oh, I know.
What in the world are they going to inherit?
I know.
Well, thank you for bringing it. It is a tough subject, and usually I'm glad when you're talking about just crappy old politics, you know.
It's less scary.
Yeah.
I hear you. Thanks, Marilyn.
Thanks.
All right, take care. Back to a more fun topic, depleted uranium. G. Roberts, the Arizona Hopi, and ex-tank crewman, writes, you want scary? Did you know that one of the layers of armor in the highly classified M1 Abrams tank is a very healthy thickness of depleted uranium? It's so heavy and dense that it not only makes great armor-piercing warheads, the reason DU is in munitions in the first place, it also stops armor-piercing warheads and at the same time ensures either non-reproduction or defective reproduction by whole generations of ex-tank crews having rode around endless hours in a sealed box of depleted uranium. Did you know that? G. Roberts. I didn't know that specifically, but I know that the radiation from depleted uranium is, it doesn't have a very, I'm not using the proper terms, and I understand that, it doesn't have a very big radius within which it radiates. I don't think. I remember one time doing some recon work at Barnwell, South Carolina, repository for depleted uranium, but plutonium. It was going to be used as a depository until the mountains of the West could be opened up. And the reconnaissance work, we posed as curious citizens from churches and schools, and we took a tour inside Barnwell. And the guy conducting the tour couldn't wait to show us a piece of plutonium. And with a Geiger counter, he showed us the we stupid people, the radiation output. And then he placed between the it wasn't really a Geiger counter, but it was one similar to that. Maybe it was. I don't know. He placed between the little thumbnail of a plutonium and the Geiger counter a sheet of paper. And the Geiger counter stopped clicking. And his point was, it doesn't take very much to protect yourself from plutonium. Hell, all you need is a piece of paper. And that was supposed to have been real impressive, so we would all go back to our schools and churches and civic associations, of which none of us belong to, and tell all the good folk back in Macon and Atlanta and Chattanooga and places like that, hey, this stuff ain't going to hurt you. It's all right. It's okay. Down there in Barnwell, they showed us this thing with a piece of paper. Well, I understand now that an effort is being made. And when I was down there, it was in 1978. It was right before a bunch of us got arrested for the reconnaissance mission. Then we had a huge demonstration, and some of us went on General Electric? Was it Westinghouse? I think it was Westinghouse property. Then Westinghouse made nuclear reactors, and they also, it's so long ago. God, it seems like so long ago. But it's my understanding now that they're trying to get rid of Barnwell. Either it's full up with radioactive junk, or they've run out of sheets of paper. One of the two. Did you understand that? Floral writes in, Barofsky, the investigator attorney who is reviewing the TARP money, said today on Dylan Radigan that they have 75 ongoing investigations from which he expects some criminal charges over the next few months. Really? You mean there might be some chicanery or double dealing with how much? $700 billion? The TARP money, was that Bush's or is that this president's? Who knows? George in Oregon writes, Mike, the problem with depleted uranium is that when it pierces armor, the kinetic energy is dissipated as heat, which vaporizes the uranium into fine dust that gets blown downwind forever. People breathe the dust and it damages their DNA and causes cancer from the inside. No pieces of paper in there to shield them, George in Oregon. Yeah, that's the horror of DU. It's in the environment in Iraq. Depleted uranium was used, I think, for the first time in really widespread use. I know it was used in Yugoslavia. Clinton used when the attack against Yugoslavia occurred. We seeded Central Europe with an awful lot of depleted uranium weaponry. But George Herbert Walker Bush's war, invasion of Iraq, I believe, was the first time that depleted uranium was used, at least to the extent that it was used there. And as a result, there have been, pick your own number, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, tens of hundreds of thousands. I mean, pick your own number of cases of horrendous birth defects of the of the sort that beggar description. It's very difficult to describe a baby that is born with its brain outside its skull or with a face on three sides of its head. I mean, how do you describe that kind of stuff? Or a baby being born headless or with no internal organs. I mean, it's unimaginable. And it's from what George is writing about here, about depleted uranium in the dust, in the air, everywhere, everywhere. Who was it that said America should tremble if such a thing as a just God does exist? I've mutilated that quote. I forget who said that, but yeah. Dave is in Chicago listening to XM. Hey, Dave.
Hey, how you doing there, Mike?
I'm all right. How are you?
Yeah, I got a couple questions to ask you. Where does the middle class wage start and where does it end? I try to Google it and I try to Yahoo it, and I still don't know where it starts and where it ends.
I don't either. I guess it, I don't know. I guess it starts around 40,000 for a family of four and goes up to, I don't know, 110,000, 120,000. It's a pretty, maybe it starts at 50. I don't know either, Dave. I don't have a clue.
Oh, and next page. You know, I thought of something about, you know, how people outsource jobs and that's okay for America and American workers. You know, I sat around my house one day and I got up and everything I touched was made overseas.
Yeah.
So I figured out one thing that we could do. The people that like to outsource, you know, our politicians, maybe we should outsource them. Does that sound like a good one?
Yeah, it does. Yeah, absolutely. You know, when I think about how corporate America and Clinton and the two Bushes all cooperated to drive everything out of this country, although the exodus had begun before these three musketeers really put the finishing touches on everything. But when I think about that, I don't know. I don't have the words to express it because I grew up at a time when everything was made in America. You laughed when you found something that in the fine print said made in Japan. And I can remember when dishes that were exquisite were called China because they were made in China, but they were very, very rare. And anything made in Japan was crapola. You know, it was just pure junk. It was garbage. And I realize, you know, that was a long time ago and I realize things change and all that, but I'm just saying I'm a prisoner of that kind of attitude. When you grow up at a time when farmers farmed and factories made and unions worked and people formed that middle class that neither you nor I can define anymore, it seemed like things were going in the right direction. But if you really parse that history, you find out, no, it wasn't. Everything was being polluted at the time. And we had racial inequality, gender inequality. We were all involved with our CIA. Of course, you and I didn't know this, but the CIA was overthrowing governments and twisting things into shapes that people like you and me would never recognize. But still, it's fun to think that back in the good old days, it really was the good old days, and I don't think it was. Right, Dave?
You're right. You know, I want to tell you, keep up the good work. And I know that you have the most intelligent listeners out there. Maybe somebody will actually call and let you know where the middle class actually starts and ends.
All right. We'll see if somebody will call in. Thanks, Dave.
Keep up the good work.
Thank you, sir. All right. Take care. I don't know. I guess that's about right. I don't know anymore. I really don't. If you have an idea, send me an email. We'll be back. Stick around. We still have an hour of fun and frivolity here on the Molloy program tonight. Stay with us. Welcome back. It is 7 past the hour on the Molloy program and not on the Molloy program. You realize no matter where you are on Earth, it is now 7 past the hour. Whew. I don't know how the program slipped into extinction mode, but will you find that so we can play a little bit later, the Busta Rhymes thing? But that's what we've been talking about here. Hive collapse and other... oh, yeah, that's right. It was an article out today about... biologists are getting a bit worried about all the species that are going extinct. Amphibians, bats, what are they? Are they mammals? Bees, insects, all sorts of things. And that kind of morphed into this depleted uranium thing, the whole pollution thing. Normally, these are not the topics that we talk about on this program, and I think one of the reasons is that, you know, talking about politics and the craziness that seems to define our political system as it goes extinct is, to me, a little less threatening, because I guess I look at it this way. When the political scene gets too intense and too ridiculous and too beyond control, which is, hello, what it is now, you can ignore it. I mean, really, you know, this has been done many times before. People just say to hell with it and tune out. And then it gets worse, and then maybe it not so worse, then worse yet, and then maybe not so. Yeah, you know, I don't know. There are just so many crazy people who are making decisions about political issues. You know, whether those decisions are domestic or foreign policy decisions, whatever, economic decisions, everything is just getting crazy. And sometimes it's best to step out of the crazy, just say to hell with it, and go about our little lives. At least that's the way I look at it. You know, my little life, my life is so little. It's so little. It's just eating you. You know, I've got 2 or 3 people in my life that take center stage, and then maybe 4 or 5 more who are not quite center stage, and then a few family members who are still alive. And but it's so tiny. And that's reassuring sometimes. The political scene is so big with bombs and poison and stuff. So it's scary to talk about extinction. It's not scary all that much to talk about political madness because, like I said, you can always check out. You can always just drop out for a while and just say, oh, to hell with this, you know. I've got to get back to the real world. You know, I've got to get my tomato plants pollinated. I've got to, you know, find a job that really pays, you know, stuff like that. And then you get jerked back. If you read an article, randomly, you know, you pick up New York Times on Tuesday with Science Times, or you read something on the web, or you get a copy of Discover magazine or Discovery or whatever the hell it is. I don't know. Scientific American. Any of those. All of a sudden you read an article that says, blah, 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 blah. Oh, no. Oh, no. The bees are gone. The bats are going. Frogs are being born with their heads on backwards? Oh, my God! And, of course, if you add that to what you already know about our use of depleted uranium, it's just overwhelming. I mean, it really is. It's just completely overwhelming to the point where you just want to throw up your hands and run screaming into the woods, which is not necessarily a bad idea, but the screaming part doesn't make a lot of sense. Running into the woods is probably a good idea. So I guess we're kind of running into the woods tonight. It's talking about bee collapses and everything and cell phone towers and depleted uranium. It's too much. By tomorrow night, we'll be back to the trivial, which is political horse hockey that we all have to deal with here, right? The budget. That was the big news today. Barack Obama submits a budget. And the budget is $2 or $3 trillion, and with a deficit projected of 1.3 or 4 or 6 or 2 or 1 or 9 or 7, yeah, it's nonsense anyway. And you know it as well as I do. Everybody talks about, well, how are we going to pay all that off? Get real. What do you mean pay all that off? You know, Ronald Reagan put us $1 million in debt. When he took office, I think we were, a trillion. When Reagan took office, I think the national debt, not the budget deficit, national debt was about half a trillion, about $500 billion. By the time he left office, it was $2 trillion or $3 trillion. And now we're up to what? It's incalculable. And everything is still moving along. We don't have any jobs here anymore. We don't have any health insurance. You know, a lot of our cities look like they're falling apart, which they are. But the political class keeps going, right? Keeps talking about, well, we're going to do this, we're going to do that. Here's the budget. We're going to cut education. Here's the budget. How much is in that budget for weaponry? A trillion? Wow, $1 trillion. I'll be damned. How much is in there for education? Really? Only that much, huh? Okay. How about farming? Ah, not much, huh? Okay. But we need $1 trillion. We need to have $1 trillion for the Defense Department. We have gone insane! Now, right here is about the time where in, you know, a couple of weeks ago, I would let loose with a string of SOBs and GDs. But, you know, I'm trying very hard not to do that. I really am, because it's offensive, and I know it's offensive. But I don't know what else to say. You know, I don't say it anymore, but a couple of weeks ago, I would have said at this point, son of a bitch! But there's no point in doing that, because it doesn't do anything. You know, solves nothing. So I won't say it. But that was a big story today, Barack Obama's budget. And John Boehner, you know, the perpetually tanned minority leader in the House, what did he have to say about it?
Well, I'll tell you what. I, if you listen to us, what we're going to do is, we're going to go buy a new pair of shoes. And maybe other socks adjusted, but you know, this is crazy.
Or something like that. Whatever Boehner says is, not only is it superfluous where it concerns life, but it is meaningless where it concerns politics. It's garbage. Submitting the budget is garbage. You know it as well as I know it. The ruling class in this country, and that's defined not by scientific achievement, not by, dedication to the betterment of human life, but the ruling class, the moneyed class, the people who buy the toys, the people who churn the markets, the ruling class will make sure that there is some sort of existence as long as those of us down here in the sewer play the game. If we take up weapons and overthrow them, then of course it's a different situation. So the point I'm trying to make, the bills will get paid. It's all paid by funny money. And looming on the horizon is China. But, you know. The big story today, though, Barack Obama submits a budget. And man, it was a whopper, wasn't it? Holy Toledo. What was that in the State of the Union address? We're going to cut discretionary spending. Oh, yeah? For who? Oh, that's right. School lunch programs. Oh, okay. That's cool. We'll be back after this break. Let's chat, all right? The number here is 877-996-2556. I'm Mike Malloy. Stay with us.
Got ahead, and heart is strong, and things are changing.
practice your synchronized screaming. It's Mike Malloy.
Twenty-one past the hour. Larry is in Bullhead City, Nevada, listening on XM. Hey, Larry.
Hey, how's it going?
Is there a place called Bullhead City?
Oh, there sure is. It was named after a rock that was out in the middle of the river. It kind of looks like a bull's head to some people.
How many?
Not to me.
What's the population there?
I'm not really sure.
I mean,
just a skinny little thin strip right across the ditch from Laughlin.
Oh, okay.
Gambling enterprise.
Gotcha.
I called in about several things. One thing was the bees, when they come in contact with some of that Monsanto stuff, they got some genetic deal where they got the plants to produce their own poison. That was just one of their products.
That's right, yeah.
With the corn. And they don't really need the bees to pollinate the corn because they plant it real close together. As long as the humidity's high enough, they'll just pollinate each other right there real close. But if the humidity gets too low, then all the parts dry out before it gets done.
Well, is that good news or bad news? Anything that Monsanto has its fingers on or in has got to be bad.
The bad news is that the poison that they wanted to have in the plants to keep the bugs off of them, stays in the crop. And so they supposedly only feed it to animals. But the pollination, it spreads to other nearby crops. And so you got stuff that's contaminating everywhere.
Right.
And then they sue people who complained. They sue them for stealing their genetic manipulated product.
You know, when I was in high school, because I didn't take any biological sciences when I got to university, when I was in high school, we used to study about hybridization, how who was the guy, Kathy, that did all the experiments with hybridization? Mendel. And, hybridization is one thing. But genetically altering is something else again. And this is just purely rhetorical question, but how did these enormous agrochemical companies get control of our food supply? How in the hell did that happen? Where was I? I must have been on vacation. Where were you, Larry?
I was out in the field. I was outstanding in my field.
Oh, yeah?
But I was doing some small farming and grew up in an agricultural area near Phoenix, Arizona. We got wiped out by people that wanted our water enough to kill us for it.
Yeah.
But the there was big, huge money behind the hybrid product stuff. And it's not good. What you need is seed that you can use every year.
Sure.
You don't really need these hybrid products that are out there. They're just there to keep people from being able to replant readily, and it's a monopoly type of thing. So big money went to this attempt to monopolize the food product.
Yeah, what gets me, Larry, is organizations like Earth Liberation Front now, or some of the organizations that find it sickening that farmers can't plant unless they use something that's been genetically altered, and these kinds of environmental organizations are now labeled as terrorist, whereas a company like Monsanto is labeled as this great American producer of food. And you talk about having things bass-ackwards. It's astonishing. Larry, I got to leave it there. Thanks, pal. I appreciate you checking in. It really is, huh? Terror, terrorism. Terrorism is when 19 people come to this country and somehow manage to get on airplanes and somehow manage to kill 3,000 people. That's terrorism. When we when we literally salt an entire nation with depleted uranium and cause hundreds of thousands of deaths and deformities and sickness and illness that will go on when the planet is ready to be consumed by the sun, that's how long that crap will be in Iraq. That's not terrorism. That's fighting for the freedom of the Iraqi people, right? All right, we have a break coming here rapidly, so stick around. We'll take your phone calls. We have one open line, 877-996-2556, if you are inclined to give us a call tonight. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
When did your life...
Because without dissent, it's not America. Here's Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour, it is. Quick email here and then back to your calls. This is from Nora. Many insects are natural pollinators, ants, flies, butterflies, wasps, but Western civilization has such an anally tidy view of what perfect agriculture is that the response to other bugs is, kill them! My neighbor has one of those bug zappers killing everything that flies all night long, every night of the summer. It's insanity. Even moths are pollinators. Think of them as night butterflies, but my neighbor can't think of it that way. There are beautiful American mason bees, dark and busy and noisy. One day I heard a lady ask the hardware store clerk for an insecticide because she was afraid of these large black bees and didn't want them in her yard. Since individual consumers now buy more insecticides than farmers, I'm worried that most women at the hardware store, that woman at the hardware store is the norm. Most farmers and licensed ag pesticide professionals know that insecticides should not be applied when bees are active between sunrise and sunset. But how many individuals know that? Or like that lady, spray the bees on purpose. Ah! I have to admit that we have a lot of those big black bees in the spring, and they bore holes in the, they get out their little drills and they bore holes in the wood on our house. So what I have is a water pistol, and it's great fun. You know, it's, you know, for me, it's probably not very much fun for the bee. I'm going to get all these emails, Kathy, you watch. You son of a, you know, you, it doesn't hurt the bee, I don't think. I think the bees like it because they never go away, but I squirt them. And, you know, one out of 20 shots, I'll hit one. And they go, blah, 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 blah. Then they go right back to boring holes inside, you know, into the wood around our screened in back porch. I guess I shouldn't confess stuff like that, should I? Nah, I guess not. Steve is in Austin, Texas, listening on XM. Hey, Steve.
Hi, Mike. Love your story about the squirt gun.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, I mean, you got to get your kicks where you can, right?
Simple pleasures.
There you go. That's all it is, right?
That's it, yeah.
way early in the program, you mentioned...
Oh, by the way, it's not one of those big, you know, AK-47 looking things. It's a little hand squirt gun that you can get at the dime at the Walmart for 89 cents. All right, I just wanted to clear that up.
Yeah, no super soakers or anything.
No, like that's it. No super soaker, right?
Exactly, exactly. Quickly, you mentioned about China exporting toxic cigarettes and toothpaste.
Yeah, yeah.
And would we do that?
Right.
Well, to a degree, from the blatant to the less blatant.
Yeah.
The blatant is armor and our armament from the United States, of course.
Right. Right.
Not quite so. A little more benevolent is things like Monsanto and Dow Chemical, et cetera.
Right.
The answer about how the agribusiness is infiltrated by these massive companies is seeds.
Right.
They sell the seeds, and then they prevent you, under injunction or whatever, from using the seeds that your plants make that year. You have to buy new seeds every year.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. How crazy is that?
Well, it's the American way of business. That's capitalism at its most insane. And you know, I still get emails from people that accuse me of, since I am anti-capitalism now, why don't you go live in Cuba? I would if I could, I guess, you know. But that's not the point. The point simply is when you have, as you point out, you know, when you have a chemical company that can do what Monsanto does, and Monsanto is not the only one, God knows, but they're the ones that get all the publicity. When you have a company can do that, what the hell do you call that? What does a person call that if it's not predatory, sick, disgusting, murderous capitalism? What do you call it? I can't think of another term.
Monopoly.
Yeah, that, well.
They've driven all the smaller seed companies out of business.
Right.
And, you know, require farmers to buy their seeds each and every year instead of using what nature provides.
Mm-hmm.
But, and then the far more insidious export of the United States is Christianity, not just fundamental Christians, although they're, you know, they've got a little category of their own.
The evangelical stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But just Christianity in general, because they're complacent when it comes to those fundamentalist freaks, and they don't call them out, and they don't say, well...
Hey, well, since you brought it up, Steve, what do you think of this story that's been out there for a couple, 3 days now, the Baptist American Christians that got busted with the 30-some Haitian children? They're being held in jail now, accused of trying to kidnap these kids for who knows what purposes. I honestly do not believe that these Baptists were trying to kidnap children for nefarious purposes, but I also believe that there was an arrogance, among these white Baptists that said, well, let's go scoop up some of these children. Our motives may be pure, but our arrogance, overrides the motive almost. I mean, what do you think of that story?
Good for the Haitian authorities. These people are opportunists.
You think?
I think they're disaster opportunists, and like you say, some of them might have, you know, good intent. You know, they see this and that on a superficial level. They see these orphans that have lost their orphanage, blah blah blah. But bottom line is, no, you people need to go back to your own counties, wherever you might be from, and leave these people to heal and solve their own problems with some assistance.
Mm-hmm.
But quit this interference. Quit this nefarious. That's not quite it. Kind of just slip it in. Okay, let's go in and grab some orphans.
Yeah.
And bring them to Jesus. No. These children, orphan or not, they're in their homeland. Oh, homeland, I'm sorry. They're in their home.
Right.
And they need to stay there. And they've got family. The island is a family.
Well, I think what happened, so many of those kids, when they were questioned by authorities, said, no, you know, my parent, my mother, or whatever, is still alive.
Yeah.
I certainly believe in rescue missions, but your idea is the one that the United States should be doing, rather than going down there and scooping up children. Why don't we establish what is it called, the little microloans, so that
Southern Asia,
so that people can start businesses and become self-sustaining in their own country. You know, it starts out as a microloan, and then it becomes something much more stable than that. Instead of exploiting the hell out of people and stealing their children and saying, well, we're doing this as a humanitarian thing because, you know, it says so in the Bible, or it says so someplace. That's the part, this arrogance. There's a lot we could do for people as a result of this hideous earthquake. But stealing their children, I don't think is one thing that, you know, we wouldn't want people coming in here. What would happen if we had an earthquake and all of a sudden, dark-skinned people came swooping in, snatching up our children? How long would it be before we whipped out our guns and started shooting?
All the Christians would whip out their artillery. You're damn right.
It's crazy time, Steve. Hey, thanks for checking in, man.
You bet.
All right, appreciate it. You know, just like when that hideous event occurred, no, there's no way to blame anyone for a natural disaster. But there's certainly, unless you want to consider some scientific developments maybe that are being experimented with. But I don't go with the HAARP thing. The geologic reality of these two plates, the Caribbean and the Pacific, that's not what they're really called. But anyway, the two plates rubbing against each other, and as a result, this earthquake, that works for me. But the conditions of the population prior to this earthquake, we are responsible. Yeah, we are. We're responsible for this. We really are. You know, going all the way back to the 1700s was it the 1700s or 1800s? Which one was it? The Monroe Doctrine, where we made it very clear any interference by a foreign country in the affairs of the Western Hemisphere would be met with force. Okay. Now, I realize that document no longer exists. Not really. But still, that was such a big, important event. The Monroe Doctrine. If you're going to claim territory, don't you have to kind of take care of the folks that live there? By take care of, I don't mean a paternalistic slave-master relationship. I mean, oh, hell, never mind. But the arrogance of that, you know, too. And now to see these white people in jail. I would imagine one would not want to be in a Haitian jail, especially not now, but not any time. Really. Of course, you wouldn't want to be in an American jail either, would you? But they're so surprised. These people seem so surprised that they're in jail. Well, wait, we were just trying to do good. Yeah, okay. Before the hour. But damn, we didn't talk about we didn't talk politics tonight, did we? What? Well, you can't say that on the air. I've been told Nathan. Nathan is in Eugene, Oregon. Hey, Nathan.
Hey, Mike. I'm a long-time caller. I've been listening to you since back before you were reading 1984 on the air.
Oh, my God. That's a long time ago.
Yeah, well, it's a long time for me. I'm only 23, and I actually, I got to give you credit for giving me inspiration to study political science in college. I actually changed it to be my major. And
really?
Yeah, and then I got so into it because my professor rocked so much because I knew so much because I was listening to you every day that I started doing really well in school for the first time in my life. And then I started, like, campaigning for Barack Obama somewhat regrettably,
yeah.
But sort of not. Just, like, you know, since a year and 2 months before the 2008 elections. But that's not why I called tonight. I called because tonight is just been about, like, energy and not energy, but the environment and these bees and all kinds of stuff. And
mm-hmm.
I've been wanting to call in for a while about all kinds of different things, but tonight sparked my interest mainly because I just got my very first job almost a year ago. I've been working for this environmental website where basically we've been making a timeline about all of these different occurrences throughout the past 10,000 years of civilizations completely destroying their environment. Like the Eastern Island people will go in and wipe out their entire forest to get the stone heads from one side to the other, and as a consequence get wiped out. And it's the most single repeating thing in all of history is when humans come to a place, much like you said earlier, like a virus, and then they populate,
mm-hmm.
and then they just spread and they consume everything. And when I was working on the Obama campaign, people would ask me, what's the number one issue? And, you know, people would expect me to say the economy, but that's such the gut reaction to mm-hmm. that question, because the true answer is, well, it's energy and the environment. It couldn't possibly be anything else because
that's right.
Energy is what keeps us in the war with Eurasia.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
It keeps us over, you know, resources and.
Mm-hmm. What's the website that you're writing for?
Right. It's called tenthmill.com or tenth millennium is what it's supposed to be abbreviated.
Tenth. T-E-N-T-H.
Yep, M-I-L.
Tenthmill.com. Tenthmill.com.
And the reason why we call it that is because human civilization has been around for 10,000 years.
Right.
Ever since human civilization occurred and we went away from the hunter-gatherer society, we've just been destroying everything. And so this website, if you go to tenthmill.com/mission/timeline, you can get a timeline of all these different occurrences. I didn't write the timeline, but I definitely helped mm-hmm. with every aspect of the website for the past year. And we just went up like 3 or 4 weeks ago. And so we're trying really hard with it, just, you know, trying to get the word out.
Yeah, this
upcoming environmental legislation.
I just went to your site. Yeah, this looks good. This looks good. You've got some writing here.
You're
one of the writers.
Yeah, I've been one of the bloggers. I also helped with the upper management for a while, but I've since decided that writing is probably what I want to do. I've been critical a little bit recently about Barack Obama and advocating for clean coal.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't really got a good clean coal article up yet, but we're talking about it a lot at the office. Clean coal has been one of the things that's been really getting under our skin because...
There is no such thing.
Exactly. Not only that, but also mountaintop removal, which is the process used to extract the coal, is probably the most damaging act a human being can ever put upon the planet. He's essentially raping the land by blowing off, leveling the tops mm-hmm. of mountains.
Oh, I know. It's horrifying.
And then all of this toxins get in the water too. It kills the fish, it kills streams, and in the process you're deforestation, like cutting down all the trees. You can't drive down, let me start here. 95% of all of the United States forests are gone.
Mm-hmm.
They're not coming back. And a majority of these trees are going to come back for hundreds of years because they were on slopes of mountains, which were 30 degrees or more. If you cut those down, you cause mudslides.
Mm-hmm.
It takes hundreds of years for trees to grow on the sides of hills like that. So,
I see a couple of your articles here. Obama cuts federal CO2 emissions while boosting, quote, clean coal, end quote. That's one that I'll probably read tonight. And also, star-studded cast promote Clean Jobs Act. I'm sure you got more. Well, this is good. I like the graphics, too.
Yeah, we worked really hard on the graphics. Now we're trying to produce more content. But, hey, while I'm at it, there's two different contests. On the website right now, one's for writers. If there's any writers out there who want to contribute to our website for like good stories or good pieces about the environment or history pieces or anything that you want to give to us, we have a reward for $1,000.
I noticed that
for a good writer, and we also have artists. We're into the arts. We're trying to promote artistic talents.
Well, this is
poets.
Yeah, this is great, Nathan. I'm going to bookmark your site. I hope everybody goes there, 10thmill.com. Thanks for turning us on to it, okay?
Yeah, thank you.
I'll probably be stealing material from your site to use on the program. Hey, stay in touch.
Give us some.
All right, stay in touch, Nathan.
Thank you.
All right, you bet. Take care. It's a good site. Check it out. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.